Tuesday's lecture is about, I'm going to continue talking about the precepts, and I'm still going through these quotations from Suzuki Roshi about the precepts. So as most of you know, Suzuki Roshi was the founder of San Francisco Zen Center, a Buddhist priest from Japan, who came to Sokoji Zen Center in San Francisco as a missionary and ended up starting San Francisco Zen Center. So here's a quote about this. He said, "We should make our effort in our everyday, and for that reason, we should make our effort in every day, in our everyday lives." Suzuki Roshi, by the way, his English was sometimes a little iffy. So, we should try to make our effort in our everyday lives, and therefore some form of practice is necessary because it is not possible to be concentrated in an uncertain way. So he's talking about how we conceptualize about the nature of how we're going to respond. And basically he refers to this as rules of how we act. So this is the connection with the precepts. So he says that it's not possible to be concentrated in an uncertain way. Because of the rules, it is possible to be concentrated. So because of the precepts, because of these guides that we have about the nature of how we're going to live our lives, we're able to concentrate our focus, kind of describe to ourselves the nature of how we want to be in this world. So this is a kind of conventional conduct that we're engaged in. And what came up to me when I was thinking about this is one rule of conduct we have, a kind of axiom we have about this, is we say the end does not justify the means. That's kind of a slogan that we have. The end does not justify the means. So immediately I thought about our political situation. This kind of story, this kind of rule is a guideline, something that it does constrain us. So we say, well, my conduct makes a difference. How I do something and getting what I want. For example, it's not okay to lie to get what I want. So there's an example of where, you know, this would be a way in which the means by which we get something is not okay. You know, it has the kind of karmic repercussions for us to be doing this. So we just had an election where basically it seemed like someone was saying anything that they needed to say or was willing to say anything to get people to vote for them. And This is a kind of selfishness, a kind of breaking the precepts. So we've been, in our classes, we've been talking about how the underlying basis of the precepts is Buddha nature. The underlying basis of precepts is that everything is in this interconnected, interpenetrating relationship. So when we talk about this, Dogen says in Shoaku Musoka, he says, you know, that there is no right or wrong. There basically are things just as it is, as Suzuki Roshi would say. So what he's saying here is that the world itself in this interconnected cooperative relationship that's making our life, that in itself is the basic motivation for our compassion and wisdom. So if we can ground ourselves in that, then that becomes the answer to our question of what is the right thing to do in this situation. Again, Dogen says in Genchokon, he says, to carry the self forward is delusion, to allow myriad things to come forth is realization. So when we allow, when we say, oh, well, the end justifies the means, that's carrying the self forward in that example. That's the way we say, well, I'm breaking the precepts. It's okay for me to break the precepts because I'm doing something that I think is good, that's all right to do that. We're saying, no, you have to allow the myriad things to come forth. You have to allow the totality of every element that's involved in that situation to come forth and be part of that process. And so lying would not be an appropriate response. for example. Dogen says about this, something like this. He says, this is pointing oneself north in order to go south. So this is this way in which we really have this kind of delusional thinking in which we point ourselves in this direction, or we go in this direction, and actually what we want to do, what we're saying we want to do, is behind us, so we're going in the wrong direction, that we can't get there from here. So in the election, Donald Trump encouraged racism, xenophobia, all sorts of things. He lied about facts. You know, there was a lot of fact-checking that went on, so we know that there was just a lot of delusion and sort of sleight of hand that was happening in the election. So no matter how pure the intentions were in that regard, whatever he might, like for example, he just gave a rally a couple days ago, I think, and he said, I absolutely am against all of these things. I'm against racism. I'm against, you know, all of these things. And so it's not okay for people to run around and, he didn't specifically say this, but it's not okay for people to run around and put swastikas on buildings and things like that. But the problem is that it's already out of the bag. That it kind of condoned this, if our small self in a way was condoned this way of saying it's okay to go out and be aggressive, it's okay to go out and express all these ways, that what we're talking about, what Suzuki Roshi is saying here, he says the rules of conduct, right, the precepts, they are in a way, this deeper vow that we have is what keeps us from doing something like that when we're angry. We've all had that experience of wanting to blame. We've all had the experience of seeing someone that we perceive as other than us, in whatever way that might be, other in obvious ways like racially or religious, anything like that, or just other in the sense that we don't agree with them, right? That they have other ideas about things. So we make people the other, and then we blame and say, well, it's okay that I did this unskillful thing. It's okay that I aggressed on them. It's okay that I did something that was, harmful to them because they deserved it, you know? So what keeps us from acting on those kinds of feelings? What keeps us from responding that way? Well, part of the thing that keeps us is our kind of social convention, our sort of social, contract that we have with each other. Our religious practice, our spiritual practice keeps us from doing that. Because no matter how spiritually evolved we are, how mature we are, we have these thoughts that run through our head every once in a while. But the question is, do we act on them? And the answer is, hopefully, for the most part, no, we don't. But how do we get to that place? We get to that place by having what Suzuki Roshi is calling these rules, right, that constrain us. So when we're little kids, our parents say, oh, you have to say thank you. That's a precept, right? That's a precept that we learn as little kids. When I was growing up, you had to call all the adults by their last name. Miss so-and-so, Mr. so-and-so. Your teachers were, I don't know if I knew their first name. It was sort of titillating to know the first name of your teacher, you know. So these were these rules of conduct, precepts in a way, that we were brought up with, kind of created this formality and a certain respect for our elders, whether they deserved it or not. Can you remember going to your parents and saying, oh, that, what did your parents say? Well, it doesn't matter because this person's your teacher, therefore you should, you know. Now, as we grow older and we're more discerning, we might say, wow, that really wasn't okay, what that person did. So that's, kind of different. But you see where I'm going here. So, and these kind of are, the more we understand the nature of these kind of rules, the more subtle our response can be, the more discerning we are about what's an appropriate response. So the precepts are like that. You know, we say, one precept is, in the mind of the bodhisattva, there is no stealing. So in a way, that's very subtle, right? The full-fledged bodhisattva does not even think of stealing. It just doesn't even enter their mind. And we're like that too. You know, we don't have to make this into some kind of exalted person. There are times, there are areas in which we just don't even occur to us to do whatever this breaking this precept might be. But a precept like do not steal, also there's the way of phrasing it like do not take what is not given. So that's kind of, that really opens it up in a way. It's like we have some no stealing is in some ways is kind of like maybe the not so subtle way. So stealing is very black and white. But then it's not when we talk about, the example we've been using throughout this is like taking a pen. So when you go and you take somebody's pen, is that stealing? But then we were, Jaco and I were at the conference and Patty, we were all talking about pens from the Hilton and how they give them out as promotional. So if you take a pen from the Hilton, is that stealing? Well, no, probably not. So there's this way in which there's the question is, what does that word mean? And essentially it means do not take what is not given. And do not take what is not given to carry this self forward is illusion. That's taking what is not given to allow myriad things to come forth is to take what is given. So this way that we look at something like, you know, why does Dogen say to carry this self forward is delusion, to allow myriad things to come forth as realization? Because that's Buddha nature. Buddha nature is this way which we acknowledge that we are completely in this interconnected relationship with each other. So that's allowing myriad things to come forth, which includes ourselves. It's not like everybody else gets to be first. It's more that we're all in this together. We include myself in this, but that self is no more important than the totality of everything else that's happening. And also this awareness of that, the awareness of to not take what is not offered. That's an aware, certain kind of awareness. To carry the self forward is a kind of ignorance and delusion about the nature of one's real situation. So this is, the ends do not justify the means. So that's this kind of admonition that we have about how we should live. So no matter what our intention is, if we're deliberately doing something that we know is breaking the precepts, then it's not okay. That's not a reason to do it. And this is an egregious example. But whenever we talk about these examples, we should always look at our own conduct and ask ourselves, you know, what is my motivation here? Is my motivation for doing what I'm doing? And we can usually tell, because when we have a lot of emotion around something, anger or especially negative emotions, when those come up for us, that should be a kind of ding 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 to us to say, oh, I should pay attention to this because maybe right now I'm going to want to do something that's actually breaking the precepts because I'm so upset. It's kind of like I say, well, that's an excuse. It's okay to do it. You just don't even think about it. You just do this thing that's not helpful. So don't just go to this place of saying, oh, Donald Trump is this horrible person because he and all of his cohorts did all of these horrible things. They're never anything that I would do because, of course, all these things are on a spectrum and we're all human beings together, right? I'm not condoning this. I'm just saying when you're hearing this lecture, please also consider the possibility that you might be in that spectrum somewhere along this line of, being skillful or unskillful or this desire to kind of do things and rationalize what we're doing. So the next Suzuki Roshi quote is, he said, our effort is to observe the precepts. When you ask whether your way is perfect or not, there is an insidious idea of self. When you do your best to observe the precepts to practice Zen, within big mind, then there is enlightenment. Our effort is to observe the precepts. When you ask whether your way is perfect or not, there is an insidious idea of self. When you do your best to observe the precepts, to practice them within big mind, then there is enlightenment. So, oftentimes we want to make up our own rules. This is a continuation of what I'm saying earlier. We would just want to make up our own rules. I was talking to somebody about the precept of do not kill. And he was saying he had just recently taken the precepts, done Soda Rock Sioux and done Jukai. And he said, well, he wasn't my student, he was somebody else's, but he told me, he said, well, you know, I don't like the precept do not kill. So what I did is I rewrote it in a way that works for me. And it was kind of long and had a lot of, you know, dependent clauses and things like that in it, caveats and that kind of thing. And I thought, well, I said, you know, well, that's too bad, because actually the koan, like do not kill, the precept like do not kill is a koan. You know, it's a way in which we can really go deep and examine the nature of what does it mean to say do not kill? You know, is it just about whether you squash the cockroach in your house? Is it just about, maybe I shouldn't say just, but is it about, you know, getting rid of rodents that are in your kitchen? Or does it have something about killing our spirit? Is it something about a lack of generosity? Is it something more subtle, perhaps, than just this question, which is a big question, but just the question of taking life in that specific way? Is there something deeper going on? So when we redefine things so that they make us more comfortable, because we always want things to be clear. We always want to redefine our lives so that it's really structured and clear. So this, in a way, is not the kind of rule that Suzuki Roshi's talking about. He's talking about the kind of rules that cause us to go deeper. He's talking about the kind of constraints, if you will, that cause us to look deep, more deeply into the way we're thinking about things, more deeply into our lives, rather than making it more comfortable for us. The rules that are koans make us uncomfortable. They're like, oh, this jacket is too tight. I don't like this. But we say, stay, you know, pay attention to this. What's happening here? So we can't, like, change the rules. We have to be very, very, very mature to change the rules. People say about Zen forms, which are very specific and in some ways very strict, people say, well, they're too Japanese, I want to change them. But the problem with that is that usually we do that when we don't understand what we're doing, and it just makes us uncomfortable, so we just want to change them. And the way we change them makes it more comfortable for us. And then we don't learn as much from that, because we've just kind of changed them to in our own image, and our image may be a little delusional occasionally sometimes about the nature of what's actually going on. So he says, when you ask whether your way is perfect or not, there is an insidious idea of self. So this, I think what he's pointing towards here is our desire to want to make a black and white situation. So we want to make it black and white. And then when we make it black and white, what it does is it reflects our own ideas about what black and white is. And that's that insidious idea about self. So we can do that with a precept. You know, we say, well, you should do this. Inevitably, it's you like the other guy, right? But sometimes we do it to ourselves, too. We really beat ourselves up as well. So this way that we need a kind of spaciousness, and the spaciousness is not about the spaciousness of it's okay to do whatever I want to do so I can get my way. It's more like a spaciousness and curiosity about what is it? What is this about? What is the deeper meaning here? So the precepts are very good for that. And if we're particularly upset and we want to kind of lash out, the precepts are really good for that. Four Noble Truths are really good for that too. You know? There is suffering. There is a cause of suffering. I'm suffering. I want to get, you know? Well, what causes suffering? Suffering is we want to get rid of something, we want to get something, or the kind of technical term is the desire for re-becoming, which is this way in which we perpetuate our own self-image by perpetuating these stories about what's right or wrong. And that, I think, is what he's talking about here. And then we have the precepts, you know, do not kill, do not harbor ill will, do not steal, all these precepts. And we can say, well, you know, you can really do this. You should say, oh, I'm really upset. This ought to dissipate your upsetness real fast. Get very intellectual about it. Sit down and say, oh, the Four Noble Truths. Oh, I'm suffering. Am I holding on to something? I want to get rid of something. And then you go through all the precepts. And then by that time, you're exhausted and you go to bed. And you wouldn't have done any harm. So. Or you can sit zazen. You can't get in too much trouble sitting zazen. So when we get attached to our own ideas about things and we make up our own rules, that can be a problem. So, you know, going back to Donald Trump, he seems to have made up his own rules about this kind of conduct. This is not the spirit of our bodhisattva practice. This is not how we want to follow Big Mind or follow Buddha's way. Now, I was thinking today about this and I thought, well, maybe you might think to yourself, if people like Donald Trump do the kinds of things they do and they seem to get ahead, that's kind of depressing, right? And I was thinking about, you know, Bernie Sanders took the high road when he said the famous quote about, I don't care about your damn emails, right? But Bernie Sanders lost the election. But on the other hand, I started thinking about when the Japanese were interned here in California, yes, there were a lot of people who said, oh, here's my chance to get a house for really cheap. But there were also a lot of people who said, hey, I'm going to take care of your business while you're gone. And people came back, and their businesses were still functioning. There are people that, for whom that happened to in Watsonville. Or during the Holocaust, we think about the horrors of the Holocaust. And yet, there are all these people who did these amazing things. That is so important. That's like this deep stream of the Bodhisattva way. There's a part of the Lotus Sutra where the Buddha is, Buddha's told everybody he's going to die. And people, his students are really freaked out about it. And so they're saying, well, what can we do? What can we do? You know, how can we carry on your teaching and all this? And the Buddha said, well, actually, there are these bodhisattvas under the earth, and all of a sudden the earth opens up, and you hear this chorus, and all these thousands of bodhisattvas who are all chanting together, and they rise up out of the earth. And that's our practice, you know? That's our practice. Our practice is we are the bodhisattvas under the earth. We are chanting continuously. We know that the end does not justify the means. We know that every time we do something that's unskillful, that that leads a seed in us, that something that grows in us and says it's okay to do the next thing that's not helpful. So we know that about this, and so we discipline ourselves. We follow the precepts. We do the best we can to follow the precepts. Because what we deeply, deeply, our vow in our heart is to be the bodhisattva under the earth, to have the courage to be that foundational rock. There are millions and thousands of stories that we know about during really difficult times of individuals who did the right thing. So that's what we want to do. That's our deepest vows, to do the right thing, to struggle to figure out what that might be. So even though it's depressing to think about this situation, we want to encourage ourselves to be that person. We want to encourage ourselves to follow the precepts with each other, regardless of what our political beliefs are. This is not about whether or not we agree with the politics or the solutions that people are coming up with. I don't think that's what this is about. This is about, how do we do the right thing for each other, right? With the people that we meet in our everyday lives, not in some kind of abstract way. So I think that's what Suzuki Roshi is talking about here. This is a way that we can understand what he's talking about. So this is why we can't make up our own rules. This is why these precepts and rules have to be koans for us. They have to be ways for us to encourage ourselves, ways for us to go deeper, ways for us to really ask ourselves, what is it? What needs to happen here? And there are difficult things, like what Sandy brought up. You know, this is a difficult thing. But what we do know about what Sandy brought up is this sense of compassion and realizing that we want to do something in that situation. And what is it that we're going to do? And then that becomes the hard thing, right? That sometimes can be really, really difficult to know. And it really is situational. That's the thing about you know, these kind of rules, like the precepts, is that the application of them is situational. And you don't know exactly what the right thing is to do in each situation, but you have this foundation for doing it. We have this foundation of knowing that we want to do what is inclusive. So, and it has to come from a kind of wisdom and compassion. I was just reading this article this morning. This is kind of interesting. So they were talking about the difference. They did these brain scans of people who were experiencing empathy and people who were experiencing compassion. This is in the Wall Street Journal this morning. So empathy, it turns out, has a lot to do with whether you actually feel some kinship towards the person for whom you have empathy. And empathy also it actually lights up a different part of the brain than compassion does. Mm-hmm. So you have empathy towards somebody, and then you find out that they root for a different team than you do, and then you're like, give them the shock, you know. But when you have compassion, it lights up a different part of the brain, and it actually is more responsive regardless of whether or not that person holds the same views you do. I thought that was very interesting. So essentially what we're working on here is compassion, right? But I think maybe it's better to say we're working on compassion and empathy. But there is this way that we have to, and people who are caregivers know this, right? There's this way in which you have to step back in order to not burn out, a step back in order to be present for what's happening. So that's a kind of this, and that would be what they're talking about is compassion. And this kind of empathy is, so there's empathy there too, but the compassion is this way in which we, in a more global way, are able to do that. So the precepts are a way for us to look at and say, how can I be compassionate in this situation? How can I actually act in this situation? What are the guidelines for me to respond in this situation? So I have my vow that I want to have this big mind. I want to be that bodhisattva rising up out of the earth. I want to be the guy who looks at my neighbor and says, you know, your farm's going to be here when you get back. I want to be the guy who says, yeah, come on into my house, you know. But again, it's all situational. So we take those precepts and we say, what does it mean to say do not kill? What does it mean to say do not steal? What does it mean to say do not harbor ill will? How do I actually respond in this situation? And with that ground of compassion, that ground of wisdom, of the interconnectedness. But it can't be something, it isn't something that's our motivation, and maybe our inspiration is something that is more general, right? But the actual application of it is very specific. So then, so we look at our conduct, we look at our reason for doing things, and make that part of the process of following the precepts, breaking the precepts. atoning for our mistakes, making a change. And these precepts, this practicing of the precepts is the same thing as realization. It's not separate from. You know, in Sufism, we have this phrase, Dogen used, practice realization. So our practice itself is an expression of realization. We do not practice as the means to attain realization. Same thing for the precepts, right? The precepts are our actual practice and realization. Our expression of the precepts is our realization. Our expression of the precepts is our practice. So I'm going to stop there. Thank you very much.